Good morning, Wisconsin. Morning, world. It's a new day. Thank you for kicking it off with us right here at WFHR, locally grown radio. 9:05 on the clock. Got your host, James J. behind the mic. I am joined by Terry Johns.
Good morning.
We hope you're having a good one out there, everybody. We got some entertainment news to kick things off. We'll get into some other fun stuff throughout the hour. Danny Wright stories coming up a little bit later, and some good stories of the day to wrap things up. We got some local good stories we want to touch on, some great events going on in our area we'll talk about. For right now, we're going to the skies with Elton John. Sir Elton John, I should say. Sir Elton John has performed Rocket Man countless times, but it wasn't until recently that he learned the inspiration behind it. In a recent interview, his longtime collaborator, Bernie Taupin, revealed that the lyrics were inspired by Ray Bradbury's collection of sci-fi stories, The Illustrated Man. I remember reading that as a kid. It was really interesting. It was the first time I read something like that, I think.
Isn't that kind of cool? For as long as this song has been out, and as long as he's been singing it, they never had that discussion?
It's very cool, especially how long they've known each other.
But wouldn't you think that that would come up?
Yeah, yeah. He said, quote, "In that book, there was a story called The Rocket Man, which is about how astronauts in the future would become sort of an everyday job. So I kind of took that idea and ran with it," to which Elton responded, quote, "Do you know, I never knew that." I can just hear him saying it, yeah.
And you know what's funny? The author, who did you say was the author of the book?
Ray Bradbury.
Yeah. So can you imagine him?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
if you know what I mean? Like, if he had been through the course of time being like, "Hey, that song's about
my
story."
Yeah. That's awesome. And three of the greater writers and three of the more influential people in entertainment in the last 60, 70 years and everything, and Ray Bradbury to Taupin to Elton. That's kind of an interesting kind of combination there and everything. I have to be honest, I read that as a kid, The Illustrated Man. I remember reading that. I never made that connection. I've listened.
Like, you never thought of that?
No. Yeah. My mom and dad have listened to Elton John my whole life. I'm sure I've heard Rocket Man literally as long as I've been alive, and I've never made that connection. Never thought about it. I read that book when I was in high school or junior high or something like that, I think, too. So it was quite a while ago. I saw this one, and I wanted to dive into it, but I wanted to do it with a pro, so that's why I wanted to go into this with you, Terry.
All right.
We're in Women's History Month, and this article came up. I thought it was pretty cool. So Everything Nash posted a list of the – that's a great name, by the way. Everything Nash, Nashville. I like that. That's good. Everything Nash posted a list of the most influential female artists in country music history. We're going to go through the top 10. If there are any, like, outside the lines, anybody who didn't maybe should have been mentioned that maybe you can think of or something, Terry, or maybe I'll run it in. But we go right at the top of the list. I don't know if these are in any order.
Okay.
But it almost seems like it is. First up, Loretta Lynn.
Awesome.
Their opening line about her pretty much says it all. Quote, "It's hard to imagine where country music would be without Loretta Lynn."
I agree.
Yeah, very much. That's funny, too, because as a layman, I wouldn't have said her right away. But seeing the list, like, even if this isn't in order, and I don't think it is now that I'm looking a little farther down, I do think Loretta Lynn, that's got to be the first name, if not one of the first names, the first two, three names you mention when you're talking about women in country music. Yeah, Loretta Lynn's got to be. Number two, Dolly Parton.
Dolly Parton.
She and Loretta were longtime friends. When Loretta passed away in October, Dolly said that they were more like sisters.
That's cool.
That is really cool. I hope people don't skate past that. Those two being friends in an industry where they're pitted against each other, where they're fighting to get noticed, where they're fighting, like, it's not like...
And they couldn't be more... same heart, I think, but couldn't be more opposite. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Dolly's all... Her looks or how she, how she presented herself. Yeah. And Loretta was pretty... grassroots, right? Pretty, I don't know. So that is funny.
And it's cool. The fact that they were friends for as long as they were and everything, and that industry growing up in that industry and where it's so hard.
Like, and they had to stick together, probably.
Yeah, probably.
I mean, honestly.
I imagine
it's not like now.
I imagine that they realized that they were stronger together than apart and looking out for each other. This is a weird reach of a connection. But Saturday Night Live, the first cast, Lori Newman, And Jane Curtin and Gilda Radner realized that as women on that set, like, hey, this is a boys' club. The only way we're going to get our sketches, or we're going to get, we push it and we do, we come up as a team.
And we do it together. Yeah.
And that's what did it for them. That's how a lot of those sketches got made, is because they went into Lauren's room and actually, like, hey, we're all three of us are here and that kind of thing. Reba McEntire at number three. She's put out over 60 albums, more than 120 singles, and had a hit in every decade since the 70s.
That's really awesome.
I've always known that Reba McEntire was an incredible human being and an impressive artist and all that. Having it laid out
but
for
the longevity,
me like that,
yeah.
Whoa. I did not really. I've actually underestimated her, I think. And wow. That's very impressive. Tammy Wynette comes in at number four.
Yeah, I figured she had to be on there.
She had a ton of hits in the 60s and 70s. Of course, the classic Stand By Your Man from 68. Number five, Carrie Underwood. She brought in a ton of fans and gave country a huge boost after winning American Idol in 05. A lot of people will say that I don't think that she, that they don't say that she saved country music or anything, but that there was a dip. There was this huge peak after Garth Brooks, and then year after year, it kind of like tinkered down a little bit. And then you get to 2005, where, or the early aughts, where country music is kind of like at a crossroads, if you will, of going either just pop or going even hardcore, more into twangy country and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it was kind of the what's next, right? And she brought that, intentionally or not, but she definitely brought it.
Yeah. A modern name, so I think that some people might kind of push back on that. And I don't blame you with those big names we mentioned before, but I think you also have to look at this like down the line, 10, 20 years down the line. Carrie Underwood, more than likely, if she keeps going the pace she is going to be in that that echelon. I'm not putting her up there with Dolly or Reba or any of those,
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing is 2005 is almost 20 years ago.
God, that's
I mean,
crazy.
She's not just...
That's crazy to think
right?
about. You're so
she's,
right.
She's not the new kid anymore.
I cannot call her a new artist when you've been around two decades doing this. You're so That's a great call by you. Dottie West. Younger fans might not know a lot about her, but she was a big deal in the 60s, 70s, and the early 80s. She did a bunch of duets with Kenny Rogers, including Every Time Two Fools Collide. Sadly, she passed away at 58 through a car crash on her way to the Grand Ole Opry in 91. Ooh. That so many car crashes in country music. You know, there's a lot of stories of artists.
You mean in the music or actually happens?
Well, I guess both. Yeah, I guess both. Yeah. Tied for my favorite voice of all time, Patsy Cline. Billie Holiday, Patsy Cline, two favorite voices of all time by far and away. Patsy Cline, some people might argue she belongs higher up on the list. She also died young in a plane crash in 63. She was just 30 years old. So I think the reason why she might not be higher on the list is because she didn't have the wasn't able to have the longevity.
Yeah, and I wonder, I mean, you're right, iconic voice, you know, and that resonates with a lot of people, but yeah. Not a lot of longevity in her career, and did she even have the opportunity to do some of the things that these other artists have?
Right. Especially at the time in the 60s when she was famous. There wasn't the opportunities or a lot of the things that are available, but... Man, I know that it was a shorter career, and I don't know what I'm talking about when it comes to country music, but I would think that you can't... Well, actually, I don't know if you can talk about music and not mention Patsy Cline. Not just country music. I don't know if you can talk about music and not talk about her. Like, that voice is iconic. You've never heard a voice like her, and you haven't since. Like, there's plenty of these. All these artists on here have great voices, but I don't think any of them have a voice like that. And I'm not taking anything from any of them.
No.
All iconic voices. Then there's Patsy Cline.
Yeah,
it's
absolutely.
Just a different level. Trisha Yearwood comes in at number eight. She was huge in the 90s. Her very first single, She's in Love with the Boy, hit number one in 91. Trisha Yearwood is one of the people that, when I was talking about that that dip in country, is one of the people, like, along with on the male side of things, a Clint Black or somebody like that, that gets credit for keeping country music alive, keeping it relevant and all that.
I've always liked her. I enjoy her music. You know, she hasn't put out much recently, but you know that's Garth Brooks' wife.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's that. There's kind of that part of it, too.
Yeah,
like, do we both stay in the...
That I can't,
you know,
imagine
do we both stay
like
in the limelight
navigate.
Or, you know, so I don't know. But, yeah, I agree. I think she was pretty influential in the 90s for sure.
I apologize. I am not familiar with this lady. Jenny Seeley. Janine Seeley.
I don't know if I am either.
Her biggest hit was Don't Touch Me back in 66. She was also the first woman to regularly host segments on the Grand Ole Opry and the first to wear a miniskirt on stage, which was a huge deal back
Rebel.
In the day. Yeah.
Rebel. So no, I don't know who that is.
I gotta
That's
look
cool.
her up. I got to look her up. I want to learn a little more about her. Number 10, Shania Twain. Her first album in 93 was too poppy for some fans, but then her second album 2 years later had 6 number one hits and helped make country more mainstream. You don't have your Carrie Underwoods or so many of the young ladies in country music nowadays. You ask them who their biggest influence is, and they'll mention a lot of these names, but Shania Twain's name comes up every single time.
See, and that's so interesting to me. And I never minded her music. I still don't. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not turning it off if it comes on or something like that. But I don't know that she belongs in the top 10. You know what I mean? Like, I have nothing against her. And I do think that she did. She was part of that shift.
Yeah.
And like you said, you know, maybe influences for Carrie Underwood and some others. But I guess I don't put her that high.
As a layman again in this conversation, I agree with you because of what you've been saying and the things that I've learned from you or other people about country music. Bob was really into country music a lot too, and working with him, I learned a lot about the industry. I would have a hard time going from, you know, Loretta Lynn, Dolly Parton, Reba McEntire, Shania Twain. Like, that doesn't work for me. No.
It doesn't really for me either. And again, nothing against her. And she's actually has a comeback album out now, So, I mean, I get that. But I would have saw maybe like a Lori Morgan in there. Ooh, and I know there was some, not a lot of people loved her. And there was some conflict around her. And because of her father being also an artist, But I don't know. I just think that there's maybe some others that...
Top 20 favorite interviews of all time I've done is with her, is Lori Morgan. Could not be sweeter. That woman made me feel so like I was on the phone with her talking to her before we went on air, and I get goosebumps a little bit thinking about it just because she was so sweet. And so I kept thinking, like, is this really her?
Yeah.
Am
I on with the secretary here? She was being honored at the Grand Ole Opry when we were there, and she was super sweet. And, you know, she's been at the Opry how many times, at the Opry, but she had that like giddy kind of childlike, you know, excited about being recognized. And I thought that was really, really cool. But I don't know. I kind of thought that she would have been on there.
Yeah. Some honorable mentions. Tanya Tucker came in at 11.
Mm, for sure.
She was 13 when her first single Delta Dawn came out. I didn't know that.
No.
Wow.
Yeah, that is true. And it's kind of, I don't know. I agree. I think she had an awesome career and, you know, great music. The 13 thing throws me a little bit, especially back then. You know what I mean? But good on him.
I would have switched Shania Twain with this artist that came in at number 12, Miranda Lambert. She holds the record for the most ACM awards and has more CMAs than any other female artist in history. And she's one of those people that brought me into learning country music a little bit more. I heard her voice on the radio, and I didn't know I had a country station on. I just heard her voice, and I'm like, I got to learn more about this human being. I don't know who this is. And I remember running into the station and asking a bunch of people, like, hey, what was the song we were just playing? Who was that from and everything? Because it was back in Plover when GLX and all of our stations were kind of in the same building.
Before we had Snapchat and we could get the music.
Way before that stuff, yeah. And I was fortunate enough to, I think Ace was the one that told me that it was, oh, that's Miranda Lambert and everything. I've been learning about her and admiring her ever since. I'm not going to say I know a ton of her music, but her, the human being, and her writing style, I think is very cool. Her voice is something. Like, I think.
See, and I like her, and I like her music, but she's, you know, same era as Carrie Underwood.
Yeah.
And for me, they don't even compare. Yeah. Even though she's gotten way more awards and and maybe it's just something about Carrie Underwood, because to me she's much more graceful and much more philanthropic and a little bit more refined. And Miranda Lambert to me always just seems like she's going off the edge. But I agree. I mean, she's a very talented artist, and she certainly has a place on this list, whether it be now or maybe, you know, somewhere down the road.
Yeah. I love the list, though. I like it. Any other names? I can't think of any that they...
I mean, I'm sure there's some.
At, like, you know, at 8 o'clock tonight, you might think of like that, you know. But for now, I think that's a pretty solid list.
You know, we're dark from 8 to 9, so I can't even send it to you.
Right. That's funny. That nice reference. Nice callback. Looking at what's new on your small screen and big screen this weekend, of course, it's March Madness, people. What else are you watching? It's basketball.
I'm watching anything but that.
I suppose. Friday on Apple TV Plus, the series premiere of My Kind of Country, a music competition series with Jimmy Allen, Mickey Guyton, and Oliver Peck. They handpick a roster of new artists to compete against each other in Nashville.
Interesting.
Yeah. Friday on Hulu, this year's premiere of Up Here. It's a musical comedy written by Mae Whitman, from did the Parenthood stuff and everything. Love is Blind, the fourth season of that is on Netflix. Let's see. The World Figure Skating Championships are on NBC at 7 o'clock tomorrow. That could be good.
Yeah, that could be awesome.
Those are usually entertaining. The on Sunday at 7 o'clock on CNN, the Mark Twain Prize celebrating Adam Sandler. I have a class at that time, so I won't be able to watch it.
You got to DVR it.
I got to do something because I got to see that. I have to see my guy win his award. I got to see it. Also on Sunday, American Idol auditions continue. I haven't watched American Idol in over 10 years, but that was the only part of American Idol that I remember
watching.
Because
it's hilarious.
Yeah, it is. It is.
And Simon would just be like,
"Oh yeah,
what are you doing here?" You know?
Sunday on Axis TV, the first season finale of Rockstar Shuffle with Winona Judd. Should the Judd's been? I don't know if
maybe.
That might have been one. Hmm. And let's see here. The fourth season premiere of Succession on HBO on Sunday. That is also new. And then looking at your big screen, what's new in movie theaters this weekend? The Lost King is in limited release. That's a dramedy with Philip Langley in it. Steve Coogan and Sally Hawkins are also in that. And also in limited release, A Good Person, a Zach Braff movie that he wrote. Florence Pugh is in it, along with Morgan Freeman. And the big one coming out today, I'm surprised I'm not at the theater already waiting for this to come out. John Wick Chapter 4. Obviously, Keanu Reeves returns as John Wick. You got Lawrence Fishburne, Bill Skarsgård, Lance. It's also, the film is dedicated to Lance Reddick, who played the Charon, the concierge, and he passed away just this past week. So I thought it was pretty cool that they did that so quickly.
Yeah, call it out for sure. Okay, so how good are they? Like, do I need to get caught up?
Oh, I like them. I don't know if you need to. Well, actually, I would say the first one is really good. Like, the story and the action is good. That's why they made four of these. The other ones, I don't know if yet. I watched them because I love Keanu Reeves and I love action movies, so it's a perfect marriage. But I don't know how much you have to watch. The first one I would definitely recommend to people. I would definitely recommend the first one. Nowadays, when you get, especially when you get a guy like Keanu Reeves who does his own stunts, the majority of them, learns the actual martial arts, can actually pull this stuff off, has the physique to be able to do it and everything, and you get a good story. That's the perfect marriage to me of the action that a lot of people like, and a good story that carries it along. I get a little tired of explosion after explosion. Like a lot of Michael Bay movies are like this, The Rock and everything. We used to joke that Michael Bay, he didn't need dialogue, just explosions. Like instead of two people talking, explosion. You know, I'm going to confront you with explosion. You know, that's all it was. These kind of movies, yes, the action is in there. The story helps. The story and the action help carry along the whole thing.
Yeah,
I thought it was really good. I cannot wait for that one. That looks really
good. I hear
good.
A lot of people talking about them.
There's like...
liking them, but...
Well, and I'll say too, though, in this most recent one, it doesn't sound like there's a ton of story. I've heard people that have seen the movie already telling me that like there's like 4 or 5 20-minute action scenes in it. Like just nonstop action. So I don't know how much story dialogue there is in those. That's good stuff.
So John Wick 5 will be all action straight through?
I really hope there is. I really hope this is the last one.
Like,
I kind of
like
do.
The script, the actual written script is like 4 pages for 2 hours.
Yeah.
What do we do for the rest of the time? Just beat each other up.
That's it. We'll figure out the rest as we go along here. We'll take a break. We'll come back and have some more fun in the morning show at WFHR. Welcome back to the morning show here at WFHR. Terry and James taking you through the hour. And this is an interesting one. Most parents won't just tell you who their favorite child is. It could be the oldest. It could be the youngest. It probably isn't the middle child, but it could be.
You're not supposed to have a favorite.
Not supposed to. Nobody does. Over the past few months, there's been a silly trend on TikTok again, where kids are logging out of Netflix and then asking their parents for the password. If one of the kids' names is in the password, they're determined to be the password child and the parents' secret favorite child. There are some fun responses. One person said, "I'm an only child, and I'm not even the password child." Another said, "My sister is the password child, but I'm the one who they come to when they forget the password." Others said that they're the password child for one of their parents, but not the other. And one person joked about their family being thrown into chaos when the password was adopted number one. That's funny. That's something my mom would do.
That is awesome. That's hilarious. And don't use your kids' names in your passwords, people.
No. It's one of the easier ways to get hacked. Please do not do that, people.
But okay, to this point, though, this is kind of funny.
Yeah. I misunderstood. I just saw the headline, password child, the parent's true favorite kid. So what I thought was the kid that has the password, the kid that you will share the password with.
Oh, sure.
And that's the one that's considered the favorite or whatever.
That is funny.
Spoiler alert, parents don't have a favorite. I got three kids. I wouldn't be able to choose. Like if they forced me, if the world depended on me choosing one of my kids as my favorite, sorry, everybody, we had a good run, but it's over. I'd never be able to do that. I have no idea how somebody could do that. It seems awfully ridiculous to me, the idea that a parent could do that. Now, that being said, my brother is my parent's favorite child.
But yeah, when you're the kid, yeah, it's way easier to be I'm the favorite, yeah, or that one's the favorite. And no, it's never the middle kid. No. Let's get real.
Unfortunately, it's so sad. It's so sad. I feel bad for actually, I think, you know, if it's ever been in human history, the one time would be in my family.
It's the only girl. Sister.
Yep, it's the only girl.
Yeah.
If you've met Jillian, you can't not love her. She's amazing. She's a cartoon character.
You know, when there's a whole gaggle of kids, yeah, and the youngest is a girl, I'm thinking she probably has some pull.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
You know?
I agree.
I'm just guessing. What about back when you used to have 12 kids?
Yeah, right? Yeah. The good luck. Back then, I don't think that they had time to worry about who the favorite
was. No, but probably your favorite was one of the older ones because they were helping you raise the younger ones.
True. Yes. Yes. I think about that with my nan and papa having seven.
Yeah.
And even just that, it just boggles my mind. And they did that in the 50s. I just don't know how.
It's so funny, though. Oh, this one's your, when you're a kid and you're like, oh, so-and-so's your favorite. And it's like, when you're a parent, it's exactly what you said. There's no favorite.
No. There isn't. Although I will say, my mother used to find a real good tease in this, though. She really liked to tease us with that one. Yeah, just to mess with you. Just because that was her. That was her sense of humor. It's her sense of humor.
You know, when you said that about the best one would be adopted one or whatever.
Yeah.
I was laughing because I saw this somewhere and it was like when you set your, because a lot of people have passwords on their Wi-Fi at home. And so when someone might come to your house, you know, you need to share their password with them so that they could get on their thing. And what a person was like, make go home your Wi-Fi password. So when you give it to people, you know, or like don't stay long or something like that. That totally reminded me of that.
Please check out at 11. Yeah. I like that. That's good. Take your shoes off. we'll take a break right here. We'll get to Melissa's news. We'll come back. Got some good stories. Danny Wright stories. Plenty more on the way for you here on The Morning Show at WFHR. Oh, come on.
Skip.
Yep.
Can we skip?
We're skipping.
We got to have a new one.
Yeah.
Take that out of there.
Take two. Ah, yeah, not bad. Better.
That's better.
Better. Welcome back to The Morning Show here at WFHR, locally grown radio. Terry cycling through our 90s.
Like Ace of Base, seriously.
Yeah. Well, it's better than that. This is better than that.
I don't mind Alanis, actually.
Yeah. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We hope you're having a great one out there. Thank you so much for joining us. I got an interesting one here, Terry, and it kind of plays into a little bit of the music that's playing and a little bit of what we were just talking about, going to, you know, music and going to concerts and that. And according to etiquette experts, here are the 5 rudest things you can do at a concert.
Interesting. Who are the etiquette experts?
That's what I want to know. I want to know who the experts are, quote unquote experts were to figure this out. But let's see if they got it right. Talking during the show. During the performance, the only sounds should be coming from the stage.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, certainly there's times, hey, I'm leaving, I'll be right back or something like that.
Oh, yeah. But there's also sometimes where it's like loud obnoxiousness, you know, that takes away from what you're supposed to be watching.
Well, and this happens to me almost every show where you're in the concert, you're having a good time, and a song comes on, and the person next to you, it's always got to be the guy with no shirt on, and he looks at you, this is my favorite song. Like, I don't care, man. Like, I don't, like, just get into the song.
Hey.
And he's got to make eye contact with you, and he's got to tell you this is his favorite song. Yeah. blocking people's views. Don't stand up the whole time if no one else is. That can be a real like you kicker. Yeah.
But I will say, back in August, we were at a concert. I took the girls, and they each took a friend. You know, and we went, and this was at the American Family Amphitheater, so at Summerfest Crowd. So it was big. And like people were standing. Mm-hmm. And so, but there was this one couple that didn't want to stand. Mm. And they were mad. And they kept telling everyone to sit down, you know, like around them. And I'm like, listen, if 80% of the place is standing, you're going to have to get up.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of on you.
Or stay sitting.
I'm sorry. That's kind of on them.
But yeah, when you have only one row of people standing, then yeah.
Little messed up. Yeah. Taking excessive photos and videos. No one wants their concert view blocked by hundreds of outstretched arms holding phones. The glowing screens are incredibly distracting, especially in a dark theater or arena. And
I mean, on a good note, it's not a lighter. Your hair's not getting torched.
True. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure by the law of averages, there are some that exist. I personally have never really seen anybody take video of this and it be any good. Like, it's never, like, footage.
I agree.
Not like you can hear the song or anything like that. Like, I would say at least 9 times out of 10. It's for you. You know, that's fine.
Yes.
If you want to record something for yourself, that's fine. But you don't have to necessarily share it. And don't share the stuff that we can't even tell what it is. Like, share good video.
But the whole idea of it being distracting to the other people who are at the concert.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't go anywhere without seeing people's phones.
I don't know.
It's just part of the deal.
I think you just got to kind of put up with it.
Yeah.
I understand that it's annoying.
Should probably
stay home. Yeah. I mean, honestly, if that bothers you, then you're really not going to like society because there's a lot of that. Getting too drunk. There's a fine line between having a good time and being a drunken mess who bumps into people and spills. My friends and I talk about this all the time. My dad, before we went to Ozfest, the first Ozfest, and you got like 20 bands. You get there at like 11 and you're there until 2 a.m. or something. And I'd never done anything like that before. My dad was telling us about the first time he saw Led Zeppelin, and him and his buddies were so excited. And he was actually nervous to see them. He was so excited to see them. And he had a little too much to drink and he didn't remember the show. So they had to go see him again because he didn't remember the show. And he kicks himself. He's like, Jimmy, I can't remember seeing one of my favorite bands of all time.
Don't yeah, that's that disappointing, isn't it? For sure.
We show up at Alpine Valley, and a shout out to Alpine Valley. God, I love that area. We show up there and we're bopping around because nothing started yet. And there was a guy who was getting stretchered out. That like right before a band
before
had even
it
played
even started.
A note. And like that guy is my internal example of I am never going to get too far gone. I didn't pay this money to show up here just to get
and
drunk
miss it.
And miss
yeah.
everything. Yeah. I can't stress that enough. And that's not about me being begrudging. Like, have a good time. Go ahead and have one or two if you want. I don't care. But know your limits and don't you know, pace yourself.
And don't ruin it for everybody around you
yes,
either.
Yes, yes. That's the most important
although you probably don't
part.
Know you're doing it.
No, you don't. No. Disturbing your seat neighbors. That means be on time for the start of the show and limit your bathroom breaks if possible. I mean, yeah, try getting older, man.
So
easier said than done.
Same concert, and I think I was the only adult, so I was spending a lot of time people watching.
Yeah.
But there was this couple, and they had gotten seats on the aisle. They were 2 rows in front of us, and it was all kids, you know, like late teens inside. Well, they would see someone they knew. Well, then they wanted out.
Yeah.
You know, and this is before it even started.
Yeah.
And then they'd come back, and then they were to go get and that couple was so mad.
Oh, I bet.
I mean, but I'm just like. I mean,
you and their kid.
And if you don't want to get pushed around, you know, maybe say to them, you know what, we're going to move to your middle seats.
Yeah.
If you're not, I mean, it's just part of it.
Work
it's annoying,
out.
Yeah. But it's just, you're not going to. And then their kids are like they're climbing over this over to the next row because, but yeah, that those people were not happy.
No, I mean.
And then all the rest of us behind them were laughing because they were being so angry.
I think that all of us in general can always do a better job when we're in a public setting like that of it's not about me. You know, your feelings matter, of course, and all those things, but you just agreed to go to a public thing. When I go to the movies, I can't stand when people are getting up and moving around in front of the screen or whatever. But I went to a movie. I want the movie experience. That's part of what I want to experience in this. Also, as a side note, one of my favorite, I don't know if it's one of my favorite things, but one of the things I think is so much fun about going to concerts, people watching.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you on that. Especially if there's all in between bands or something like that. Like, yeah, there is. A zoo, a circus around you. You have to take it.
And especially when it's a big conference.
Yeah.
Or a big concert. You know, it's like, oh my goodness.
Be
laugh.
So right about that. Yeah. We'll take a break right here. We'll come back with a That Ain't Right story, some good stories of the day, and plenty more for you. Getting ready for your weekend, Terry and James taking you through your morning here at WFHR. Welcome back to the morning show here at WFHR, locally grown radio. Terry and James here with you. Going to take it right to the top of the hour. Thanks so much for joining us today, everybody. Got a That Ain't Right story here for you that is a doozy. Every now and then you hear about someone eating dog food. Maybe it was an accident. Maybe it's a stunt to sell something, or maybe it's more serious survival type of thing. But this seems a little, that ain't right. There's apparently a trend of gym bros on social media eating dog food just for the high levels of protein.
Oh, so TikTok again.
One of them is a fitness influencer named Henry Classery. He tried a bowl of kibbles and bits oven roasted beef with spring vegetables and apple flavors. He couldn't handle it and didn't continue eating it. He told his followers it's not worth it. He later said it tastes extremely dry. I needed some water and it tasted like little pieces of dirt. Now the idea is trending online, people are posting videos, of course. But for now, it seems like more people are doing it for attention than as an actual source of protein.
Oh, shocker.
Shocking. Yes. All of this is for that.
Do you know, though, something funny about this? I can remember we were kids and, you know, it was like a dog treat, you know, so like a little milk bone or something. And we were joking about, you know, like, oh, my uncle was like basically in the end, he popped it in his mouth and ate it. You know, and we were all just like, no way, you can't eat that, that kind of thing. But I can't think I would eat a bowl of kibbles and bits.
No.
That's and again, eating the wrapper on the fruit roll up, eating the dog food, like, make your own decisions.
Yes. Think for yourself.
I mean, remember back in the Tide Pod thing?
Yeah.
How stupid. You know not to put that stuff in your mouth.
Just for the love of God. Just think for yourself for just 5 seconds. That's all I'm asking. 5 seconds. Think for yourself. Think, oh, hey, I can get protein from dog food. And then think for 5 seconds. Oh, wait a minute. I believe that they have protein shakes out there.
Oh.
I believe that there's some. Oh, and I Google and look, and there's a billion types of shakes out there.
I could eat a chicken breast. Seriously.
Yeah. This next That Ain't Right story is definitely a That Ain't Right one, and I think it could go down as a classic That Ain't Right story. Cannabis has strong ties to Jamaican culture, but it's not a legal free-for-all there. And this person found out the hard way. A 37-year-old American woman was busted a couple of weeks ago after trying to bring 20 ounces of weed into Jamaica. What are you doing? What are you doing? When she was caught, she told customs officers she wanted to show her Jamaican friends what American stuff was like, American weed was like and everything. I'm guessing they already know. I don't think they needed your help. What are you doing? The woman was from New York and had a license to have a medical marijuana, but she did not have permission to have it in Jamaica.
Oh.
Last week, a court ordered her to pay a $30,000 fine or do 30 days in jail for importing the drug. It's unclear what she chose or if she's able to appeal it or not.
Well, she hasn't responded because she's in jail.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I don't know what.
That's a hefty fine. I'm not saying it shouldn't be, but I'm just saying that that's more than I figured it would be. I figured they just confiscate her. Right, weed and slap I don't know.
That's what they do in the movies.
Couple $100 fine on her.
How ridiculous can you be? That would be like trying to smuggle cheese into Wisconsin.
You're going where the easiest access is?
I mean, what are you doing? That's just... I'm sorry. That is hilarious to me, though. That is very funny.
Can you imagine like those customs agents like dying?
Oh, I can't imagine like a custom agency like that job. We just touched on a little bit there. It can be a difficult job. I can't imagine what the custom agents for Jamaica, what that job's got to be like.
And when somebody brings pot in.
Yeah.
I mean, they're probably just like.
Am I a candid camera?
Come or they on, have like some, you know, dinger bell that they let everybody know. They're like, oh, another dumb one, you know.
I like that. I like the idea of that. That's great. I mentioned earlier that, you know, of course, for our star of the day, we had Star Trek, and I played a little T.J. Hooker for you to celebrate William Shatner's birthday this week. One of the things Katrina Hintner had brought to the show was a quote of the day kind of thing. And every once in a while, we do these. Haven't done one in a while. I thought we'd do one from William Shatner. And it's actually, I think, a really cool, like, introspective moment for him when he most recently went up into space with Bezos and all that and everything. I think because of all the hype that went on and all the hate that is for Jeff Bezos, a lot of what he said got lost in the shuffle. So he had this quote. I love the mystery of the universe. I love all the questions that have come to us over the thousands of years of exploration and hypothesis. But when I looked in the opposite direction into space, there was no mystery, no majestic, awe to behold. All I saw was death. He continues, everything I had thought was wrong. Everything I had expected to see was wrong. I had thought that going into space would be the ultimate catharsis of that connection that I had been looking for between all living things, and that being up there would be the next beautiful step to understanding the harmony of the universe. He continued to say, it was among the strongest of feelings of grief I ever encountered. The contrast between the vicious coldness of space and the warm nurturing of Earth below filled me with overwhelming sadness. Every day we are confronted with the knowledge of further destruction of the Earth at our hands and the extinction of animal species and flora and fauna, things that took 5 billion years to evolve, and suddenly we will never see them again because of the interference of mankind. It filled me with dread. My trip to space was supposed to be celebration. Instead, it filled me with, it was like a funeral. He took out of this moment, and this is William Shatner, not somebody that we consider a philosopher or anything like that. And it was being in space that made him realize how much he missed the connection to human beings. He missed the connection to Earth. That was what he came out of it with.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
I mean, that something that should have been or could have been.
Yeah.
Was designed to be joyful for him, wasn't.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's that kind of mourning too. Mm-hmm. Like, and then you get there and you're like, oh, this isn't at all what I wanted it to be or what I thought it would be. And we've all had that happen with other experiences.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then at the same time for him to share it.
Yes.
Right? You know what I mean? Because I think it's really cool that he did.
Yeah.
And as I'm listening to you read that, I'm like, oh, that's really very profound. But then also that he would share that because it's not a positive, you know what I mean? Yeah. In theory,
it's
positive saying the connection with the Earth and the connection with other humans and why that's important. But the whole, like, I thought it was going to be awesome and it really wasn't. I don't know. I give him a lot of credit for that.
I do too. And again, it's not somebody that I never have ever really assumed. Oh, I'm looking for a great quote. I'm going to go to William Shatner.
Some great philosopher.
Right,
yeah.
Right. But I think I have to look at him a little differently after reading this and hearing that. And
so then I think about it too, though, from the perspective of a 92-year-old.
Yes. Yes.
So 91 at the time, you know, and thinking about the course of his life and maybe where he's at in life and, you know, thinking about, perhaps thinking about death and thinking about, you know, so maybe there was some of that.
That's a really
as well.
Good point. I think that's a really good point. I want to get to some good stories of the day. We've got some great stuff going on, of course, locally here at the station. Of course, the Sunshine Poker Show goes on 7 tomorrow morning, and you'll be able to catch it at 1 on Sundays.
If you're looking for more steps, you could get up and poker.
Yeah, yeah. I just saw that Tim dropped off a new episode, so we've got brand new stuff for you. It's going to be a good one.
Awesome.
You know. It's one of the greatest shows you'll ever hear. Be sure to check that out. Of course, on Sundays, we've got Seth Faces Music from 6 to 8. Seth is going to be talking Earth and Dirt this week. He's got songs related to that.
Wait,
he's got a good theme.
So it tastes like dog food?
Maybe. If you try to eat it, maybe.
That guy
maybe.
Said his kibbles and bits tasted like earth.
And be sure to stick around from 8 to 9, Director's Cut. This week, Seth and I welcome in Chris Lee, local great artist, musician. Chris, you heard in Hoozle's Rise to Music. Such a fun time, such a great interview. Sunday, I'm going to post on our Facebook page some of the video I took from that. And then you'll be able to have kind of a little bit of a preview going into Chris's actual performance.
Awesome.
And be sure to remember, everybody, if you miss any of our live content, that's all right. We got you. You can go to the Civic Media website and get all these. We have all of our shows podcasted. Just go to civicmedia.us, civicmedia.us, and you will find all of our stations, all of our coverage, and of course, all of our great original content podcasted right there for you. Encourage you to spread the word about these shows and take a listen to some of these episodes that maybe you might have missed. And I want to get into, of course, I can't, you know, we can't talk about the weekend, talk about local events, and not talk about Nakusa Walleye.
Yeah, there's a lot going on this weekend.
And I got a website up right here, but why look at that? I got a poster. You got a poster.
That's what I'm looking at. Is now you're going to move it.
I'm going to move it, though, Adia. I'm moving on you because I want it right in front of us. And I want to thank them for dropping this off. I love these posters every year. Nakusa Walleye Day is going strong starting tomorrow until April 16th. Let's see, Terry, they got all kinds of stuff. First off, fish registration will be in the Nakusa Mobile Station at 106 First Street in Nakusa. Keep that in mind. For all catch and release and after hours fish registration, give them a call at 715-571-7550-7550.
Another cool part of this event is the wrap-up of it. So on April 16th, keep in mind that is Take a Kid Fishing Day. Yeah. So, you know, that's something, it's a little ways off, but plan for it, right? Like, figure out who that kid might be and take them on out for that experience.
I had almost forgotten this. My papa took me to that when I was a kid when I first moved out here.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's such a cool event. There's prizes for first, second, third place. It's a great time. It's a nice competition and everything. But as somebody who lived in Nakusa for quite some time and loved that area, I will tell you, this is a great event. And the fishing's great. It's all those seeing people you haven't seen in a while, the organic conversations that happen, the bringing the, not just the funds, but the people and the energy into Nakusa. They love it. They host this so well. It's such a great host city. Enjoy yourself, everybody. And Nakusa residents, thank you for hosting.
And countless sponsors. I mean, if you check out one of these posters, it's a big, long list of sponsors. So thanks to everybody who's part of this. And, you know, nothing wrong with a prize, though.
No,
I know you said there's prizes, but first prize is $1,000 Visa gift card.
That's bad.
That's pretty cool.
That is pretty
cool. And really, if you're a fisherman, who doesn't like to be out fishing?
Yes.
Right? Like, yeah. This is a good excuse.
There's no downside.
You can tell
this.
Mama you're working on getting that gift card, but mm-hmm. Let's be real. You just want to go fish every day.
And if you have follow-up questions and want to know some more about this, you can contact our good friend Howard Freeman. You can reach him at 715-571-7550, 571-7550.
You can also find their event on Facebook.
Yes, yes. Be sure to look up their Facebook page, follow along on that. It's a great way to keep up with the event year after year.
And I think Wakely's got something tomorrow too, right?
Yes, they do, Terry. You see, we've been working together for too long here. I've got them right here. Our friends at the Historic Point Boss are hosting the Wakely Sugar Bush tomorrow from 10 a.m. till 4. The guys were in this week talking about it. It was a lot of fun.
There you go. If you need a fishing break, yeah. It's right just down the road.
Down the road.
Yeah.
And you can learn about one of the greatest things in the world, maple syrup, from experts that'll help you learn about it. The art of cooking syrup was learned from Native Americans soon after the Europeans landed on American shores. Originally, the sap was boiled until it was became sugar, since it's easier to store and transport that way. And this year, something new, they've got Canadian dumplings with maple syrup. They'll be served in the house. That's pretty cool.
Very cool.
Keeping history alive and well, our friends over at the Historic Point Boss, if you can attend this event or any of the events, you can volunteer over there. Greatly appreciate you doing that. Help keep history alive over at the Historic Point Boss. Another good story of the day, real quick, want to mention, starting in April, we're going to have the monthly veterans update with Bill Heck again.
Oh, very good.
I'd like to give Bill a little bit of time off here during the break, and then, but now we got to put him back to work.
It's about time.
Yeah.
No more slacking.
No. Starting April 3rd on Monday after the Kitchen's Open segment, about 9:25, somewhere around there probably, Bill will be in with the Kitchen's, after the Kitchen's Open with his monthly veterans update.
Nice. That'll be great.
Yeah, looking forward to that. And Terry, I did want to touch on just one more time things and going on over at the United Way, remind everybody about, especially we only got a week left with the calendar, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got three things for the month of April. One is our calendar raffle, which is taking place again for the month of April, a drawing every day for cash prizes. Those tickets are on sale through next Friday, $10 each or 3 for $20. And you can stop by and see us at the United Way office or give us a call to get in on that fun. We also have a children's book drive. So new or gently used books for basically birth until, you know, elementary school age to mm-hmm. about 11-year-olds. Collecting books that will be used for our great book giveaway in June.
So cool.
And then also on April 12th, we have our Community Shred Day. And so this is in partnership with Prevail Bank. If you have sensitive documents in your home that you no longer need to keep there, you know, like you don't need 7 years of bank statements. Mm-hmm. So you should get those out of your home and get those shredded. So if you have those sensitive documents, bring them over to Prevail Bank at 1601 Lincoln Street. And that will start at 9 a.m. on April 12th. You don't even have to get out of your car. We will unload for you, dump it in the shredder, two boxes free and $5 for each additional box.
Pretty cool. That is pretty cool. And keep that in mind. You can find out more by going to uwswac.org, uwswac.org. Be sure to follow the United Way on social media. It's a great follow, great way to keep up on things in your community. I also will tell you, I'll probably be using my free taxes this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. And that'll be up through the tax deadline of April 17th.
Yeah, this weekend or next weekend. One of the two. I got to get it in. I don't like waiting until April.
You got a couple weekends left.
I got a little bit of time, but I don't like putting it to the end.
Get her done.
Yes. Also, wanted to mention, of course, coming up in just a few after CBS News, we will have Morning Magazine, our final one of the week, and it's a good one. Amy Vetter with the Aging and Disability Resource Center will be in with us. Amy and I are just going to talk about the EDRC in general and kind of remind people about some of the great services that they have. And in part two, Wisconsin Rapids Public Schools Superintendent Craig Boren going to be with us, along with Tina Miller, principal at Howe, and Justin Weinhold, physical education teacher with Howe.
Got a great lineup today.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Terry, thank you so much for hanging out with us. Appreciate you. Have a great weekend.
You too.
And you guys have a good one. Meet us back here next Monday for more mornings here at WFHR, locally grown radio.